actually sound like a bird. That does not sound like it did in the film. But maybe you grasped. Oh, also welcome back to the Not So Fit Couple podcast with your hosts, Lucy Davis.
And Benjamin Holden.
Maybe you grasped from that little beginning who we're doing a podcast with today.
But very special guest.
Very, very special guest. So today we have on the podcast Ethan Suplee, and he is an American film and TV actor. He's best known for his roles in the films American History X, Remember the Titans, The Wolf of Wall Street, so hopefully you can gauge why we're doing that, and My Name is Earl, and he is incredible.
Yeah, it's just incredible. He's been through a transformation over his life, and we just wanted to get him onto the podcast today to really give you more detail about his transformation and also just in how much of a sustainable and healthy way he did it. From his peak of his weight gain, he got up to 550 pounds or thereabout, and then got all the way down to 220 pounds. So we just wanted to have Ethan on today to give you some insight into how you can lose weight and how it can be done, and also how it can be sustained. So without any further ado, we're going to go into the podcast and enjoy.
So thank you so much for coming on our podcast today, Ethan. It honestly means so much to us because your story is honestly, it's so inspirational. And because me and Ben are very heavy in the fitness space, it just makes a lot of sense for us for you to share your story with our followers as well in the UK.
I think the biggest thing is because of how transparent you've been so far of your story and talking to other people about it. And I think the main thing that people will take away from today's podcast will be the fact we know one of the biggest issues is when it comes to weight loss and with transformations is the sustainability afterwards. Like, most people know how to lose weight and can lose weight, but then the biggest problem that we have as an industry is then losing it. So I think one thing that people will take away today is an insight into how it's possible and how you can come from A to B and still manage to sustain that part of it, as hard as that may be. So I think what I want to do, Ethan, if that's okay, is just kind of dive into first before we go through the weight loss journey.
Sure.
Of how the other side of it came about, i.e. the weight gain, if you don't mind taking us back to the very start with that bit, if that's okay.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me, by the way. It's nice to talk to you guys. Nice. The first diet I was ever put on by kind of the people in charge, I was 5 years old. And honestly, it becomes a tricky point, which I don't even really have solutions for today. I mean, I have ideals, but I don't know that they're hard and fast solutions to offer people. But it had the opposite effect of what was intended. And, you know, I went from having kind of no idea about my body, like I wasn't self-aware at all, to having this sense of wrongness with myself that I didn't even really understand. I just knew that, I have this body, which I had never even thought about it in those terms before. And then suddenly the idea was there's something wrong with it. It's bad. And I'm going to get punished because my body's bad. And that kind of, you know, and I can't say that I wouldn't have gone this direction anyway. I have no idea, but I did just continue to gain weight because I got very good at lying and sneaking food and eating privately from a very young age. The minute I was told I had to exercise, not because I was a kid and I enjoyed being outside and being active, which I had prior to this, but because there was, again, something wrong with me and this was now a punishment, I stopped having any interest in doing it. And the minute I was told that my food was going to be restricted, not because, you know, we discussed it and I got on board with some idea of having a healthy body or having some kind of even a vain aesthetic goal, which I'm more than happy to have today, that I could participate in with my own determination. It was, there's this wrongness about me as a punishment, I'm going to be put on these various and sometimes like truly crazy, like we ventured into like nothing that you could say was like abusive, but like absolutely batshit crazy nutritionists who were doing things that like, and I today try to be very open with like anything that works for anybody is valid, I think. And if you have a winning formula, I'm not gonna discount it. But even with that perspective, some of the stuff that was kind of foisted upon me as a kid was batshit nuts. Sorry, am I allowed to say shit?
Yeah, you're allowed to swear. Yeah. We do it quite a lot.
I might have to say shite for you guys to,
yes.
to feel comfortable.
But, if there's any, but like, is there any point where we're talking and you don't quite understand our accent as well, please just feel free to tell us to slow down.
I'm so glad we're doing a video Zoom because I'm watching your guys' lips as you talk just in case I miss anything. And feel, you know, the same for me. I'm sure my accent's nuts too.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I think what we're going to do as well for people who are watching on YouTube, we'll probably flash the two images up. They're really symbolic images of your transformation as well, Ethan. Because I think at your heaviest point, were you like 550?
Yeah, the heaviest I ever actually saw myself on a scale was 536. And it was on a freight scale, like a shipping scale. Because at that time, you know, this is also, I don't know what it's like over there, but here there's plenty of obesity now. But, you know, 30 years ago here, it was kind of rare. So there were no scales at doctor's offices that went that high. I don't even know if that exists today in doctor's offices, but they kind of went to 350. And then I remember they jumped up when I was a teenager to like 400. And even then I couldn't weigh myself on these scales. So there was one point I went into a treatment center for drug abuse. And in order to, during intake, they had to weigh me, and we had to find a shipping center that weighed like big crates and boxes. And I was 536. And, you know, also I was the only guy who was addicted to drugs who continued to gain weight. Like I didn't even get that as a benefit, unfortunately, which I always had in my mind, like, well, I'm going to do a bunch of drugs and drug addicts are thin. It never happened for me. And then I continued to gain weight for a little while after rehab. So I know that, yes, I mean, I'm sorry for all the qualifications. I say 550 because, you know, a 14 pound swing when you're that heavy is like nothing, you know, it's a little extra salt.
Yeah, it's like
one
taking
day.
Shit the next day. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. But I saw 536. I say 550 because it seems realistic to me.
Yeah. Well, I'll pop those two different images on screen anyway so people can see, because it's not just like a weight loss transformation. Like on the end image of where I'm guessing like you had a photo shoot, like you look saucy as well. Like you've gone past that point of like just losing weight, and obviously you started to have lean body mass, you started to build a bit of physique, and you've really took it like that extra mile after you completed that journey. But I'm glad you touched upon the whole obesity part as well, and how, like, I suppose I've never really come across like any scales which would weigh that heavy, so I guess like we're not set up to deal with that kind of like scale of obesity. But I think that's only becoming more and more apparent as we move through, like the obesity since like 1975 has tripled. If we look at like the US and the UK, they're probably like the two top countries in regards to the world in regards to obesity rate. Like I've got some stats here, like the UK obesity rate is 27.8%, the US is 36.2%, and then you look at someone like Japan who has an obesity rate of 3.2%. It's kind of like,
and honestly, by the way, those are also sumo wrestlers who are like gods over there, you know what I mean?
Yeah, literally.
So it just goes to show like the lifestyle base of how much we can pin like obesity on, and how crazy it's getting, and the financial strain that it's having for us in the NHS is massive. It's billions of pounds every year. And I know for the US it's like 190 billion, I think it was. It's like 21% of the medical spending. So it's crazy like how much money it's taken up, and how it's predicted to only get worse, I suppose, with scale as well.
Yeah, definitely. And sorry, just on those, I had a question to ask. When you were at your heaviest, so say the 550 pounds, I guess like how did that affect you as a person, like physically and mentally, like your everyday life. I know I've listened to one of your podcasts before, it was brilliant. It was actually on YouTube, and you're explaining about the nervousness about just sitting on a chair, which was like obviously an everyday thing. So yeah, just a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's a very odd thing to think about now, because none of that was shocking or off-putting even, because it happened over so much time, and it was so gradual that it, you know, it took me breaking a chair at 10 years old to start to realize, like, oh, I can't just jump down on a chair as hard as I want. I need to ease into it, right? And so that just kind of grew, you know. And then when I think about how much pain I was in almost constantly, just sitting still became hard because of the pressure on my back in certain positions and on my joints. I'd have to move to alleviate that. There's a ton of stuff that was not thought about at all, like pain in my feet, pain in my lower back, pain in my hips, not being able to lay flat when I went to sleep because I couldn't breathe. The embarrassment of somebody hearing me breathe, like on an elevator, so I would always hold my breath if I was near people, or not wanting people to witness me get totally winded at walking up a couple of stairs. So I got very good at actually holding my breath a lot, and then very slowly recovering and keeping, you know, wearing multiple shirts because I would sweat through one and I didn't like visible sweat stains. So, you know, I'd also carry washcloths in my pocket so I could quickly and, you know, kind of undercover wipe my brow so nobody saw that. If I just let it go, I would be dripping sweat almost constantly.
Yeah.
These things were not something I just woke up to one day. So they were just part of my life. So it's been very interesting to kind of think back to the way I lived before at that weight and think about how different it is today, and still catch myself in some of the behaviors that I might not need to be participating in, like checking every chair, which I still do. And I'm probably at a weight now, I'm still on the bigger side, I'm still a very, very large, heavy guy, but chairs are probably generally built to withstand my weight now. You know, I still check them because it's something that I did for 20 years for real, because I was potentially going to break them.
Yeah, so it's like psychological.
Well,
like a habit, isn't it, as well? Yeah. It's like it's something you've done for so many years, automatically you're still just checking, so it is like a habit.
I was pulling some things up, and like things that weigh 500 pounds is like a panda bear or like a grizzly bear. So checking chairs because you're that weight is no surprise that you'd want to do that and be conscious of something like that as well. But when you were going through that process as well, Ethan, I suppose even up until now, were you kind of taking any health markers, or as you went along, like, were you getting any blood done or blood pressure to kind of like check where you were up to, like throughout the process of the transformation of the journey?
Yeah. And I had to get frequent physicals for work, because you're always insured. As an actor, you go to do a movie, and it's like, if something happens to you, the movie could be potentially out a lot of money. Yeah. And I know that for a lot of years, basically movies were paying extra insurance just to have me on them because I was a higher risk. I felt some embarrassment by that, but there was never, I just didn't spend a lot of time concerned with my health. Health was truly the kind of last thing that was a motivator for me.
Yeah, massively. And that's actually so interesting what you said there about when you're on these movie set. I don't know if you even call it a movie set. Have I just made on a movie set? Right. That there were extra health precautions for yourself. It's obviously... it's just quite interesting, isn't it? Like, I don't know much about the movie space and things like that. So it is actually really interesting to kind of understand a little bit about how they deal with different actors and things as well.
I think the thing that I always find interesting when we look at the obese population, and I know it's always a big topic, and especially at the moment on social media, is like the whole weight stigma and fat shaming and that kind of thing. Did you experience much of that in the whole acting industry?
No. Not so much in the not in the acting industry. It was always kind of strangely a benefit to me because it made me stand out. It made me interesting. It was something that was not typical, which I think movies like from time to time. So no, as far as acting goes, I never experienced that.
So do you feel like that gave you, if anything, then like more opportunities or different opportunities? And do you kind of feel like sometimes you were maybe pigeonholed into certain roles because of your size?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. It definitely gave me, within the group of guys that I would be considered for parts with, it was a much smaller group than just say, you know, if you think about our union has hundreds of thousands of people in it, there was just a very few of us. So in that sense, it was very easy, or it was a benefit. But pigeonholed for sure. I mean, there were certainly some roles that I got that were not necessarily written for bigger guys. And I went in and they were like, oh, this is interesting, let's hire him. So it wasn't absolute in those terms, but you know, it definitely played a part.
Yeah. I suppose like on the other side of the scale, and do you feel like because now you've made that transition and now you look the way that you do, like you look like a house, like you look great at the moment. Do you think that's opened up different opportunities for you, and it will do in the future in regards to your acting career?
I think that the pool of guys, you know, I mean, I don't know. I have no idea. I just did a movie where I played a military veteran, and I certainly wouldn't have been able to do that, or probably wouldn't have been considered for that had I been still as overweight as I was. Yes and no. I think that the pool of guys, I actually have no idea because I don't have such a great sense of myself. I don't know if I see myself the way anybody else does. So I couldn't say that the pool of guys who look like me now is much larger than the pool of guys who are overweight. Although I know that the pool of guys that are overweight is also growing exponentially, right? Yeah. As the country becomes more and more obese, so does that group. There's a larger group of actors now who can take that role. So I'm glad that I'm not competing with them. I don't know. These are not things I think about that much.
Yeah, 100%. I think the first time I saw you on screen was My Name Is Earl.
Yeah.
Do you remember that one?
Yes. I might have been a tad young. I remember you from Wolf of Wall Street.
It's good. What do you remember, like what weight you were kind of at around then?
Yeah. I started the first season of My Name Is Earl, I was around 300 pounds. And by the time we finished, I was around 400 pounds.
Yeah. So a big, big transition. Do you know, like when you were watching some of the episodes and stuff back then, or some of the roles that you've played, because obviously it's very different from looking in the mirror to then watching a movie back or a screen back, but you just can see yourself at a lot of different angles. Do you remember like looking or watching anything back and thinking, Jesus Christ, like I've never saw that before, or it gave you like a different realization?
Well, because of that, for that very point, the first acting job I ever had was a television series over here called Boy Meets World. This was probably even before you two were alive, early 90s. So maybe you were little kids or babies or something. But the first episode that I watched on TV, I was so surprised with seeing myself from angles I had never seen before that I utterly gave up and have never watched anything I've done because of that, because I didn't understand how anybody could stand looking at me I could barely get beyond looking at myself in a mirror. So then to see myself from another bizarre angle that made me even look bigger, you know, from the back and the side a little bit, where it just caught the entire girth of me, mm-hmm. was so jarring that I've never watched anything I've done because I just become too self-aware, mm-hmm. and am constantly thinking like, well, no, you can't put the camera over there. I must look awful over there. And I don't want to do that. It's too much to think about.
Yeah.
That's actually really interesting. So you've not watched any of the movies or TV shows since, like ever?
No.
Oh. I think I get that though, because it's like if you see a photo of yourself on like Instagram or something, you're like, fuck me, I look like shit there. You just took it away, don't you? Yeah. Don't want to see it again.
Yeah, to be fair, actually, I've never ever watched one of my own YouTube videos.
Yeah.
I just record them and put them up. I that makes sense.
I have caught my kids before watching My Name is Earl, and I was very perplexed at why they would want to do that and just left the room quickly.
Wow. I think obviously that transition that you made, I'm sure I've heard you mention it. I don't know, I saw you on his social medias before, is Mike Isatel as well. Because we've followed his work for like a long time.
Yeah, he's great.
And I think obviously the great thing for you is that you ran into, like, I suppose, the right people at the right time as well.
Yeah,
that makes such an impact and difference.
There's no way that is. And going back to something you said in the beginning, the idea of sustainability for almost 20 years, from the moment that I had the first inclination, desire to start losing weight, and it wasn't something that was being imposed upon me, but it was my own goal. There was no idea in any of these diets of what to do for the rest of my life. You know, there was a point where I guess I thought, you know, I'm not allowed to eat carbohydrates for the rest of my life. This is my burden to carry. I'm allergic to them. They don't react well with me. And so I just will never eat carbohydrates again, or eat them like four times a year or something like this, and expect massive weight gain. You know, on Christmas Day, I'll gain 20 pounds and that'll be worth it. And then I'll work for a while to get it off. All of that kind of extreme stuff did not last. There was no lasting thing. And it was really through Mike's work, and I got to give some credit to like Lane Norton also.
Yeah, I was about to mention him. He's great.
Amazing guys. But, and it wasn't even that I read something that made me go like, oh, I now know what to do. It was just on their programs where they would insist on maintenance periods in between fat loss phases, that I realized, like, it hit me like a fucking ton of bricks one day. This is how you live. Holy shit, this maintenance, like, I never thought of it. It just occurred to me, and it was after having done it for a while. Like, this is what a fucking normal person does. This whole thing, I'm still on the plan. I could not believe it. And that has been the most life-changing thing, because after doing it for a long, like, I can do any diet. You want to give me 350 calories a day and tell me I'm going to do this for 30 or 60 days. I'll do it. I will crush those 60 days. I'll feel awful. I'll be lightheaded. My vision will be disappearing when I stand up. I'll be cold the whole time. Like, but I'll get through it. On day 61, that's it. I'm now gaining weight. You know what I mean? So this whole idea of, by the way, I kind of love what bodybuilders do, because it's just a very, very simple, rational, healthy yo-yo diet. It's very simple. And then instead of doing bulking, I do maintenance, and I'm able to build a little bit of muscle, maybe not as much as I could if I put on 30 pounds, right? But I'm able to build muscle in that area too, which has been magical, because I can, like, that's what I've done for so long with no science or no thought to it. I just kill myself dieting and then try to hold off weight as long as I can, but it's coming back. I know it's coming back. It comes back, and then I got to kill myself dieting again. And the diets that I've been on, when I follow programs like Mike Isertel's and Lane's, they're not hard. They're the easiest diets. Like my coach right now is a guy named Jared Feather. He's one of Mike's students. Mm-hmm. He's a professional bodybuilder. Yeah. And the picture you're talking about, he coached me to that picture. And towards the last week, he got concerned about my hunger, and he was like, are you okay? Because we're really, this is the lowest calories we've had you on in a year. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is nothing. This isn't hard. I'm not even hungry. Yeah. Like, this doesn't seem like a diet. We're cheating, you know? It's all so much easier. I think it takes quite a bit of installing of new habits, because to go from extremes and to go from total chaos and not knowing what you're doing, there's a lot of reshaping that it requires. But once you get there and you realize how much effort and how much stress and how hard most of the other diets were, this doesn't even feel like dieting to me. It's really bizarre.
I think that's whereas, like, especially for us as health and fitness professionals, we and the industry let people down, is that people, again, depends on like which people and which educators you come across first, because we spend a lot of our time now trying to reverse a system that people got into, where they think it always has to be like fucking balls to the wall. I've got to crush it. I've got to be on minimal calories. I've got to be like cardio every day. And they get this wrong perception of what it actually is. And breaking down those psychological barriers of being like, right, okay, now we need to take a diet break. Now we need to get you back to maintenance calories for a little bit to make this more sustainable. It's quite often quite a hard psychological battle to get over with people. But I feel like often the thing that's quite hard for people, and we've discussed this in a previous podcast, is the term maintenance for some people, just like, it's not sexy. It doesn't like symbolize progress. So it's difficult for people to get their head around a lot of time. But when they do, it makes that process so much more sustainable as well. And there's a study that was just been literally released like 2 weeks ago, which you might be interested in if you've been looking around diet breaks, or you might have already seen it if you're working with those guys as well, called the Ice Cap study. And that's on diet breaks as well, and just how that helps like suppress hunger levels, suppress appetite, makes the weight loss more sustainable. It's great for hormone balance, your metabolic rate. Like, it's just, there's so many things to be taken away from it. And if sometimes you just take that step back and can really consider what you're doing. Because again, like we said at the start of the podcast, so many people lose weight. The problem that we have is, why aren't people sustaining it?
Well, yeah, it's the sustainability. And when you initially started your weight loss journey, I guess, what's there for you? I don't know, some people have like a massive turning point in their life, or there's something that happens and it's like a flick of the switch. Did you ever have that, or did you just suddenly think, for yourself, you've got to do it? Was there like a trigger?
There was a moment where I'm married now. I have 4 kids. They're old. They're probably, some of them are your age. And mm-hmm. And there was a moment where I was looking at my life before I was married, but I was seeing this girl and I was thinking like, if I want to have a long-term relationship with this woman, she was a girl, we were both kids back then, but there's not going to be a future if I don't make a change. So there was that moment. Yeah. And then that followed 15 to 20 years of yo-yo dieting. I would diet really hard, or I would start some, you know, insane exercise program. And there was a period for 2 years where I just rode a bike. I right after My Name Is Earl, I was 400 pounds. And I kind of was like, I don't really feel like working right now. I need to lose weight. What am I going to do? I started riding a bike. I got super into that, to the point where for 2 years, 40 hours a week, I was just riding a bike to lose weight. And And, you know, and then I crashed my bike. I wound up in the hospital. I couldn't ride my bike. I gained a bunch of weight. And it was just this, like, you know, so it was a constant battle. And I, at one point, was totally resigned to, like, I was even thinking, I'm going to map it out and I'm going to have, like, you know, January through May will be my diet months. And then it'll be really strict dieting. I'll do super hardcore diets, maybe even liquid diets. And then, you know, for the rest of the year, I'll try to make it slow, but it'll be way better. And I just was utterly resigned to the idea that I'm going to be yo-yo dieting forever, because from what I saw is, no matter how hard I worked to take it off, if I wasn't on a diet, I was gaining weight, period, full stop. And so the turning point for me was being super determined to lose weight again. This was like maybe 2016. And I spent a year and I was looking at all this stuff, reading about keto, and it kind of was like, seemed like, well, that's all I'm eating mostly meat, so that's got to be a lot of protein, so maybe that'll be good for muscles. And I wanted to have, because I at one point also got to be so skinny that I didn't like it, you know, when I was 200, I'm 260 today, when I was 200 pounds, I felt uncomfortably, I felt frail. I also got to 200 pounds and still wasn't nearly as lean as I am now, which was really weird. So 2016, I decide, like, I'm going to just do keto and lift weights. And I was losing weight, but when I wanted to, like, gauge it, because I felt like I was just getting smaller kind of uniformly. None of my muscles were sticking out. I was just now smaller, which is to be expected to some degree. But I started having DEXA scans every 3 months. And what I realized was, doing keto, first of all, if I wanted to lose weight doing keto, I had to restrict food. I didn't think about it in terms of restricting calories. I just knew that if I ate whatever I wanted, I would not lose weight, even if it was just steaks and avocados, right? And lots of olive oil. I wasn't losing weight. So I would then go, like, okay, I'm just going to eat smaller portions. And then I would lose weight. And as long as I stuck to that, for every 10 pounds of weight loss, 4 of it was lean tissue. And I that didn't really make sense to me, but I kept doing it for a while. And I was like, there's got to be a way to, like, mitigate some of that lean tissue. And that was when I discovered Mike Isratel. And that was when I kind of went, like, okay, maybe I'm not allergic to carbohydrates, and maybe I need more protein even than I'm getting on keto. And I kind of gave that a shot, and the difference was so night and day. It was shocking how fast my body looked different, which was what I wanted. You know, it wasn't just, the number on the scale is great, but that wasn't necessarily the factor I wanted. I wanted to see my trap stick out. I wanted to see a line in my bicep. What I ultimately wanted was visible abdominals. And I wasn't getting anywhere near that, because as I lost weight, I was also losing muscle. And I didn't understand this because I was weightlifting every day, but I also had never looked at progressive overload. So I was just in the gym going, like, today's chest, I'm going to go to failure every day, you know, or 3 times a week or something like that, or just doing, like, kind of mindless weightlifting. I can't lift it anymore. I'm done. I'm going to go do something else. And when I started, like, applying, I also had an injury. I tore my bicep. Like, I wasn't smart. Everything I'm doing now, I feel like an old man, and I can't be as extreme. I want to have exercise I can do every day for the rest of my life. And I can for sure do progressive overload for the rest of my life. Like, there's no, it's really become very easy.
Yeah, I've got a guy at the moment who I work with who's like 65, and he's like an absolute beast. And he's still, like, progressively overloading his training. It's just because he's looked after himself of what he's doing, and he knows, like, what maximum recoverable volume is. He knows when to pull back. He knows when to take rest days. He knows, like, what, when he kind of, like, losing performance, and that's when we need to take a bit of a deload from training. I think that's the good thing. And obviously, when you've been with Mike, is that I think when the focus a lot of the time becomes about building lean body mass, and that's a focus and a target. Organically, a lot of people tend to just drop body fat anyway, as long as they obviously diet, and having that different focus apart from just like being drilled into your head, like I must lose weight, for a lot of people is almost like a psychological break, and they can just have that talk of focusing on training, focusing on building lean tissue, which is obviously a benefit for a lot of people. I think the thing that I was going to lead on to next, because I know you briefly just touched on it, because momentum's a big thing, especially when we're looking at weight loss and we're looking at through a journey. However, there's sometimes like a fine line between, I know I've been there and you've been there, with when things become like excessive and you start crossing that boundary of like, although you don't know it, you should pull back, but you can't stop it because you've got that momentum there, and you feel like taking a day off is like, it's going to throw things off. Did you ever find that you got to that point where you were doing so much exercise, or you're doing so much that it did become excessive and you kind of crossed that boundary of like being on the other side of healthy?
Yes, for sure. I've done everything excessively. I've done dieting excessively. I've done eating excessively. I've done exercise excessively, and I've done sitting around and doing nothing excessively. I have done everything excessively. If I was to resort to my most base instincts, all I would do is eat fast food until I was sick and watch TV. That's it. I wouldn't do or play video games or, you know, watch movies. That is it. I wouldn't move, and I wouldn't eat in an appropriate way for my body. I wouldn't treat food as fuel. And then when I wake up and I go, I can't do this anymore, I need to go excessively in the other direction, the feeling of anxiety to get the weight off as fast as possible and to punish myself and it is so severe. So I understand, you know, I'm mindlessly going through my life, gaining weight, not thinking about anything. And then I wake up one day and it's as though I'm looking at myself from a different point of view or a different perspective. And I'm like, holy shit, what's happening? I need this. I got it. Like, I want to take my body off like it's clothes and change into a new set of clothes. And it's like, none of that is thinking long term. So what I have to do now, and it took a couple of years of practice, is go, this takes a long time. And I tell myself over and over and over again that I want to have this long term. So I'm going to set goals now for years, and I'm going to set smaller goals for like this fat loss phase. How much do I want to lose? Okay, I want to lose roughly 1% of my body weight per week in fat. So if I'm going to diet for 12 weeks, how much is that for real? Like, how much weight is that? I'm going to be really realistic about all of this. If I want to be able to exercise every day for the rest of my life, an important thing, especially when talking about momentum, is not injuring myself.
Yeah.
If I go 100% every day, eventually I'm going to break, period. That's, you know, I don't think anybody can go 100% every day without eventually breaking. Or you start to, your 100% on day 10 is like 50% of what it was on day one. And it's like, how, you're not making progress. So with the idea of really stretching it out, I'm able to confront the fact that maintenance periods are training for, if I ever want to stop doing this, if I ever want to, you know, I've gone on vacation a number of times with my family over this, and it's just, okay, now I'm on maintenance.
Yeah.
Now I'm front loading my meal with protein, lean protein. I know what a cup of rice looks like because I've measured out a cup of rice 10,000 times at this point. So like I can gauge it. And if the restaurant gives me two cups, I'm cutting it in half and I'm only eating one of them. You know what I mean? I'm getting steamed vegetables. I'm not covering everything in oil. I'm not eating cheeseburgers. But if I feel like a cheeseburger, that's okay too. Like, everything has become about moderation. And I still, having done this for like 4 or 5 years now and feeling super relaxed and super confident that I can do this, I still have to talk myself. You know, listen, to be honest with you, I fucking hate deload weeks. I'm doing a deload right now. It's my worst week, but it's 1 week every 6 weeks. Yeah. It's not the end of the world. And I know next week I am going to crush it in the gym and feel like a superhero because I took this week off. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it is what it is.
I'm so glad you said that though, in regards to the maintenance, because that's something that we tried to drill home like so often. It's such a barrier for people. And I feel like coming from a person in your position and been there, done it, it'll have such an impact on other people to kind of reassess what they're really doing. Because everyone's just looking for like, how quick can I do it? How hard can I do it? How can I get down this? And there's no balance at all with that. And yeah, through certain periods, like you're going to have times where you'll chop back and you'll come back up. And it's like for a lot of people, when they save for a house, there's going to be certain like sacrifices you have to make to get to that certain point. It's the same with your diet, but you're not saving forever. There's going to be those periods where like you can be at maintenance and you can bring the calories up and you're not going to put body fat on. I think that's when people start to realize that a little bit more. It's when we will really start to break through in regards to the fitness industry to help people sustain that weight loss over a longer period of time.
And it also actually really sounds like you're enjoying the process now. When you first spoke about it at the start, you were like, I felt like I was forced to exercise and forced to eat these foods. Whereas you sound like, listening to this podcast, you've had such a big mindset change. And even though those psychological food thoughts sometimes come back, or thinking about this and that, like myself and Ben are the same, like we've both had a history of eating disorders, and sometimes now, 4 years on, sometimes the thought process goes over my head, not that I'd act on it, but you really honestly sound like you're in such a better mental state in terms of like you're actually fucking enjoying it, which is such a massive part to actually create that sustainability for you.
Yeah, it's I can utterly sympathize with everybody who wants to have quick results. I want to have quick, who doesn't want to have quick results? I have a wife and 4 daughters. So I also know sometimes somebody starts some program and I'm like, what the hell? What is this crazy thing you're doing that maybe I did when you were 2 years old, but you can't remember it. Why are we doing that? And it's like, no, I just want to fit into these jeans for this barbecue on Sunday. And then I don't care. And it's like, okay, do your crazy thing for Sunday. Fine. I'm not going to get down on you, whatever. I think the magical place to catch a person is when they're in desperate need of change and they're willing to just turn themselves over to you and go, I'll do whatever you tell me to do. And then it's like, okay, let's have this conversation about, you want me to crush you for a month or two and put you through hell for one day, and you'll have that one day and it'll be a magical day, but then it's all going to come back. And I guarantee you it's all going to come back. Or do you want to totally turn your life around? And for the people who really can look at that and go, I want to totally turn my life around, then it's a conversation about like, this is going to take a long time. And maintenance is not an interruption of weight loss. Mm-hmm. It's training for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. That's what I think of it as. It literally is creating a new habit. I spent 30 plus years, or you know, almost 40 years creating bad habits. I'm not going to undo all of those in a month or two. It's going to take a lot of work and a lot of effort, but it can be done. And it's going to actually be easier than you think.
Yeah, 100%. I think what gets a lot of people with that is, especially when it comes to the quicker weight loss, and it's such a killer for most people, and it's a killer for most people's joy as well, is comparison. And psychologically, as humans, we all compare ourselves to other people. It's just like, it's human nature. But I think when we compare ourselves to other people's results, and everyone's like so different with what they're doing, but we still compare. And that's what gets a lot of people down with, especially the fitness journeys. And from a coaching perspective, I think the difficulty we have is, as well, there's still a lot of coaches in the industry, and there still will be for a long time, who will push people down that quick, fast weight loss route because it looks better for them. I don't know for you, Ethan, whether you've maybe worked with other coaches in the industry, because I'm sure for coaches who have maybe worked with you before, it would look great on them to get quick results. Like, I've got Ethan, big Hollywood actor, like, I can turn around quickly, we'll just punish you for like however many weeks and trying to get down as quick as possible. Because from a coaching perspective, it's what sells.
It's not even just a coaching perspective, is it? When people, you see people doing it, it's like a business thing they do as well. It's like, we've seen it so many times where they see people as like a sale number and like, look at this amazing transformation in 2 weeks. And it's like, why do you want to even promote that? Are you still helping them after those 2 weeks are up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Have you been down that route before with trainers, I'm guessing?
Yes, I have worked with a few different trainers. I will say, for the past 4 or 5 years, I did work out mostly. I still work out entirely by myself. Jared Feather, who is a rocket scientist when it comes to this stuff, has been able to give me changes to really maximize efficiency, which I could not have done on my own. But I was making great progress. So prior to him, every kind of guy I worked out with, it was really just like, here's my program and everybody does my program. Yeah. We're not looking at like you and what you need as opposed to like what this other guy needs. And I have really just found that I don't think there is one size fits all to any of this. I you know, some people ask me how many calories I eat a day, and I'm like, I'll tell you that number, but it really doesn't matter for you how many calories I eat. Like that should mean absolutely nothing to you. Please don't base what you do off that. You know, if I'm doing sets of, you know, incline bench with 245 pounds, that doesn't mean you should do that. I don't know what the hell you're doing. You know what I mean? I've been doing this for a long time. I don't even think that's heavy. Like that for me is pretty light, but I can do it four sets of 15 reps or whatever. You know what I mean? That's the reason that it's that number. What can you do, you know, to build up and eventually in week 5 be going to failure and stuff like that? Like, so the guys that I've seen who are just like, everybody does this, everybody eats this way, everybody works this way, we're not really thinking about what you did yesterday at all. That doesn't matter. Today we're doing this. Even if you did all these exercises, it just became like, I think it's very easy to create a formula or a structure and sell it as this is good for everyone. It's much, much harder, I think, with what you guys are doing and guys like Mike, which is like, everybody's different. There are some principles that we can all use in a similar way, but like when it comes right down to it, every single person is different. How much do you sleep? How much water do you drink? How many steps are you taking? Like all of these things are going to factor into it at some point, and not everybody is exactly the same.
Yeah, that's 100%. I think a lot of people are trying to push you to fit their mold rather than the other way around. And we work on like a slightly different basis. So we run a coaching platform like on a membership basis. So we've got, we don't do as much any one-to-one work anymore, but we upload like educational content. So we've got like 38,000 members on a coaching platform who will come on and we deliver like education and then give them the support and the community there to be able to make their own choice on what is going to fit for them.
Yeah, let me say something about that. I think that's very valuable. And there was certainly a point in my life where I was not motivated at all to exercise. So to pay somebody to just show up and exercise was super valuable. Or to have somebody say, here's the way you do a bunch of exercises is super valuable. And I understand that. So I don't want to totally knock the trainers I went to, because there was a time in my life where I wasn't going to do anything unless I turned up at the gym and they told me what to do. So I think some exercise every day is better than nothing. And I would vacillate for a long time between I'm going to do nothing or I'm going to do exactly what you say. And then I went over to the other side where it's like, I'm going to go to failure every day. None of those are ideal for me today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's pretty much the accountability factor of having that support there. I suppose then even what's interesting is, would you mind running kind of through what your training looks like at the moment and compared to how it's changed over the years? I can only imagine how much more progressive it is now, how you're measuring metrics and how the program then scales now that you work with Mike after following his work for a long time. But I've just been intrigued to kind of like hear what you're doing on like a week-to-week basis at the moment. That's okay.
Yeah, sure. I basically do push, legs, pull, and then throw in arms kind of randomly. Obviously triceps are on push days, but there was a picture I took and I was like, my biceps are tiny, and Jared's like, well, you can do a lot more biceps, let's throw random biceps in a lot. And that was something I thought, I can only do biceps on my pull day. And he was like, no, you can do biceps much more than that. And so I probably do biceps 4 days a week, maybe even five. But like Monday is almost always a chest day. Tuesday is legs. Wednesday is back. Thursday tomorrow is chest again. And then it depends on my week. If I'm only able to work out 5 days a week, like sometimes, because I have kids in college and sometimes they're home, and when they're here on the weekends, then Friday will be a mixture of back and legs. Otherwise, I'll do Friday legs and Saturday back if no kids are in town. And the increase in volume is very little weight, but it is going deeper into reps in reserve. So like week one, I'll try to keep 3 reps in reserve with everything and no more than probably 3 sets of any specific exercise. And then by the time we get to like week 5 or week 6, I'm going as close to failure as possible. Again, I'm alone in the gym, so failure on the bench press is not going to be something I'm interested in, because again, I'm alone in the gym. I don't want to be the guy stuck with the bar on my chest. You know what I mean? So very, very close to failure. I will do bicep curls to failure in that week. I will do stuff on machines to failure in that week, but only in that week. I'll happily do leg press to failure, but I'll never do heavy squats to failure ever, because I don't really need to do that. That's basically the evolution. And then I deload and I'm kind of like not the most enthusiastic for the week, but I understand it and I'm like excited about next week.
That's just so interesting, because obviously you've educated yourself massively, it sounds like, over the years in comparison to what you were doing. Now I've been like, okay, I know what progressive overload is. I actually know how to build lean muscle tissue. I know exactly what I'm doing. And it is obviously something we're really big on is, yeah, you can give someone a diet and how to work out, but if they're not actually educated on how much protein to have, what progressive overload is, that's where the sustainability comes from as well, being able to maintain something by just actually knowing what to do.
100%. I think that's the thing with training, and we had, I think you've seen what you probably have done with Mike, we had Brad Schoenfeld on like a couple of months ago. He's a really cool guy.
He's so clever.
Yeah. Like some shit. Just like,
he kept saying stuff and I was like, oh yeah, what does that mean?
Yeah. I talk to Mike a lot, Mike Israetel a lot too. And I'll just kind of be like, I'm sure those sciencey words are awesome. Yeah. I don't know what they mean.
Yeah. As long as you get a good bicep pump and a good chest pump on chest day,
that's good it. Muscle. That's all I care about. Yeah. I think that for a long time, I had like ambiguous ideas of what I wanted from my body, from my training, from my diet. For a long time, it was just, I want to lose weight, right? And then I found it really is not hard to lose weight. I can lose weight. I suffered. I was in such a state of physical discomfort and mental discomfort for so long, eating however I wanted, that the idea of a short-term physical and mental discomfort by dieting is not such a big deal to me. I can kind of do anything for a couple of months. But then it became like, is it possible to have something long-term? I always thought lifestyle change, it made my skin crawl, but mostly because I didn't really understand it. I thought a diet is lifestyle change because this is not what I was doing before. This is different. But it took me a while to realize that if you actually diet forever, you die, because that's what happens. That's famine, you know. That's the end result of implementing a diet forever. It becomes anorexia and you die. Yeah. But this idea of changing the way I eat forever was also unrealistic because I had so many habits built in. If you had told me, 5 or 6 years ago, you compose a meal of things that you think are healthy and then eat until you're full. I can't do that. I don't know what that means. I blew over that signal so many times as a kid that it just didn't exist within me anymore. So it was actually having to like take months and months of doing that to realize like, oh, if I'm actually paying attention, I can kind of sense my body going, you've had enough food. And guess what? It's an appropriate meal. And like all of that just takes work and effort. And it takes the ability to actually confront the fact that it takes a long time and that it is a lot of work, but it's surprisingly easier than the other way.
Yeah, so from like a hormonal perspective, like when you're going through that, like your leptin and ghrelin levels and everything must have been fucked in regards to like hunger signals and appetite. And when you're feeling full, you just blown past that point completely where you could just go and go and go and go. Especially if you're like one of those people who's like, it's all or nothing kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think that's quite fair for a lot of health and fitness enthusiasts. A lot of the time they're all or nothing. And sometimes it can be a good thing when it comes to sticking to stuff, but it's also can be bad, like we know, when it comes to eating disorders, and can really skew people's relationships with food because they'll go too far the other way. Do you think you ever got to a point, any point along the journey, where you ran into those kind of issues where your relationship was really skewed with food?
Yeah, I mean, well, for many, many years, and this also began in my childhood, because after kind of like my grandparents and parents tried to just stop me from eating by saying like, you're done and that's it, right? And they weren't like messing with the food itself. When that didn't work, we kind of graduated. We also live in Hollywood where these kind of trendy, like, you know, aha, if you just don't eat cucumber skin, you're gonna be okay. Like that's a real thing out here, you know? I mean, no, that's true. Like, what? You know, if you have to peel peppers and don't eat the seeds. And if you want to be healthy, you have to like take the seeds out of cucumber and skin them. Like there are really wacky diets out here. So there was a lot of years where it was looking for the foods that were causing me to be overweight. And even then, or, you know, what foods are appropriate for my blood type, or, you know, having muscle testing. This is this total scam where doctors like touch you here and lift your arm and tell you like, oh, you're allergic to, you know, beets or something like this. Complete crazy nonsense. Yeah. And I became accustomed to this idea of like, it's also much easier for somebody to give you a solution of like, you're just allergic to carbohydrates or gluten or whatever it is. It's GMOs that are causing you to be obese, or, you know, refined sugar or what. It wasn't ever like, hey, dude, you're eating too much. Like, work on composing appropriate meals and change your habits. It was like, you know, there's a place down the street from my house where I was off gluten, so I'm not allowed to eat gluten. Fair, fine. But like, they make a pizza that's gluten-free. It's got to have more calories than a regular pizza. You know, and so I'm eating this going like, I can eat this every day because it has no gluten, and I'm gaining weight. And I'm like, what the fuck am I doing wrong? You know? Yeah. So it was really kind of turning that changing my perspective from like, there's nothing wrong with any of this food. Now, I quote unquote, I say I eat clean. I think that's a ridiculous term too. Although I do, you know, most of my meals are very lean protein, rice and vegetables. That's what I eat a lot.
Yeah.
But sometimes I go and have ice cream. Mm. And I will say, I don't always feel great after I eat ice cream. And that's kind of my signal. Like, okay, I know I shouldn't be eating this every day because I don't feel good. You know, that's kind of it. That's my gauge. I'm not allergic to it. You know, that's it.
Yeah, I think we should a lot of the time eat on how we feel as well. I think that's just a perfectly good metric. I think the thing that you touched on there in regards to like these weird and wonderful things, like at the end of the day, that's the shit that sells, and that's why it still does well. Like it's like if you took a dog, for example, it's pretty boring to put into this perspective, but if you took your dog to the vet and it was overweight, the thing you'd probably say to you is, well, walk a little bit more and reduce its fucking portion sizes. But people just don't want to hear that. Like it's not, it doesn't give them like the buzz of trying something like which is hardcore, and it's too easy for a lot of people to fathom. The thing that, especially over in the UK, I don't know how much in the US, I think that we've picked up on, and this is a slightly, I don't think you'd call it a fad, but it seems to be more of a trend, is like the anti-diet culture and the body positivity movement. And there's some positives coming out of it, but I think there's a lot of negative stuff to confront. Like in the UK, there's actually a doctor called the Fat Doctor, and she's like been actively promoting like disempowering people from trying to lose weight, and like basically saying if you failed, you shouldn't do it. You should just give up. It's too much on genetic basis, on inheritance, where you've been born into, your privilege, and it's like fucking crazy the shit that she's coming out with, and it's pushing like this movement even more of like body positivity. And I, at the end of the day, like I believe that you should like love your body, you should be positive, but at the end of the day, a beautiful body doesn't mean it's a healthy body. And I think that's the message that we still need to get across, is that we shouldn't be disempowering people to stop trying. We should be supporting people. So I'd be interested to know kind of like your opinion on that, Ethan, as well, like that sort of movement. And do you see that like a lot in the US as well?
Oh my God. Yeah. It's wild. I have a slightly nuanced idea on it, because at the end of the day, I don't think anybody should be doing anything that they don't want to be doing. Mm-hmm. I think that for me is a point of almost guaranteed failure. Mm-hmm. If you're being forced to do something that you don't want to be doing, I don't see this as working. But if we take like your fat doctor's metrics, and we go to the poorest country on earth, who people are being born into what we could consider the worst poverty and the worst conditions, there is zero obesity in those countries. So I look around and I just see just opulence and wealth and no need for a lot of people. You know, dude, there are professional video game players now who can make a fortune just playing video games. Like, what the hell does that guy need to have a six pack for, or need to be able to like lift crates? He doesn't. So if that dude doesn't care about the metrics of health, I make a conscious trade-offs every day. I drive a car. This is not inherently safe. This adds risk to my life. I don't smoke, but I only don't smoke because I have children. If I didn't have children, I would be smoking for sure. My wife was pregnant with one of our daughters. You know, if you go all the way back to when my first kids were babies, we were still smoking because, you know, nobody was that critical of it back then. We knew it wasn't good for you. My wife gets pregnant with our third kid, and she suddenly just couldn't stand the smell of it and said, like, you're done smoking because I don't like how it smells. And I go like, okay, but then you're going to let me smoke when the kid is born, right? And she said, no, you are done smoking. So I was done smoking. I don't look at people who smoke and think, God, they're such bad people because they're unhealthy. I don't care. I'm actually a little bit envious of them. So from that sense, for me, I don't care what choices people make, but I think that a lot of these people who have goals and are going down really, really difficult paths to attain their goals and then are experiencing failures. And rather than being given the information of like, I know, or I suspect I have a structure that will be successful for you, they're being told it's okay. Your goal is wrong. Your goal is bad. This idea is wrong. I think that's borderline evil. But at the same time, I don't really like the idea that everybody should have the same idea of health as this prime goal. For me, I love Lizzo. I think Lizzo is a badass. Do you know her?
Yeah, do you have her over there?
Like, I want to high five Lizzo and like hang out with her and tell her she's a badass chick. And like, I really think that way. I think anybody who feels super positive about their body, regardless of what like the societal norms are, I say more power to them. At the same time, Lizzo does a cleanse because she wants to, health, and she takes a bunch of shit for it. And I'm like, this is insane. This to me is insane. Anybody who's telling you that your goal is wrong, I think should be, you know, told to shut up. But also anybody who's telling you that you must have this goal, I think should be told to shut up. So I don't like this idea that we can pretend that being overweight is healthy, because we know scientifically that it is a metric in declining health, earlier mortality rate, like all of these things. We know that. We know that smoking is not healthy. But if you want to smoke, by all means, smoke. If you want to ride a dirt bike and you know, like your risk in doing this is higher, go ahead. Let's not pretend either way, though, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I think that kind of thing came in as well with the whole, there was that quote, wasn't like, you can be fat but fit. But this was like completely different, because this was talking like being metabolically fit. Like, we know that fat tissue and adiposity still means that you'll be at more risk from heart disease, more risk of cardiovascular disease, more risk of type 2 diabetes. So I think that one was squashed fairly early, but it's interesting. Yeah,
I want to say something to that. I think that the idea, look, I know when I was very, very overweight, I was embarrassed about being out in public or going and doing something like taking a walk up in a mountain with my wife. And so I think the idea that you can tell people, like, you don't necessarily have to, by the way, you got to think about it in terms of like the avalanche of information out there is telling you, in order to lose weight, you got to do all this crazy stuff. Yeah. Right. And so that's overwhelming. And so to be a fat person who's looking at it and going like, God, that just seems so exhausting and so hard, and there's so many failures, I don't want to do that. And then to have somebody come along and go, it's okay, but you know, you can be fit and overweight too. You don't have to make all these drastic. Go for a walk, go outside, it's okay. People, let's cut these guys a break. No fat shaming. I'm all for that, because the truth is, your health markers are going to improve if you live a more active lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So like, and then we have, yes, it all becomes super convoluted. At some point, you know, we live in a day and age, and in both of our countries are so wealthy that there is so much less absolute demand for survival by using our bodies. You know, the guy who's out there doing construction and super active every day has more demand on his body than the majority of people in the workplace. Mm. So I can understand his needs being different. It kind of crushes my heart when people are arguing that we should all be fat, and that they're, and that, you know, we're not looking at, like, it's not poverty in a, in America that makes people fat. It's wealth.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
is the opposite yeah. of what they're saying.
Yeah. I think it's so right what you just touched on there, because I know that the thing that we spoke to people a lot about is that, like, weight stigma and stigmatization of that has absolutely no place whatsoever in the fitness industry, because we know, like, from studies that have been done, it crushes people's confidence, self-confidence, motivation. It doesn't do anything to help people who, at the end of the day, they're there to try, and they're trying to better themselves. So that person who's there to put their arm around someone, say it's going to be okay, we can focus on this, do this, they're going to help. There's a lot of people, especially in it, and that's why I think social media can be quite toxic, is they just like to comment on people's status and what they're doing. And it's not because they give a shit about that person, they want to help the obesity rate. It's just from, like, a different narrative, and it's that kind of weight stigmatization which, at the end of the day, is putting so many people off from joining gyms or starting something or speaking to an individual who might be able to help them, because they feel, like, judged all the time. And I think that's so hard for so many individuals. I'm sure it was probably a case for you, Ethan, at some point in regard to feeling judged, as you said, like, even going out in public sometimes.
Yeah, it took me a while before I had the confidence to even walk into a gym. And then I was still embarrassed. Like, I didn't know what I was doing, and I had a trainer to tell me what to do. But you look around, and there tend to be more kind of fit people in gyms than out of shape people. It can be a lot. Now today, if I see anybody who looks new at the gym, I make sure to smile at them. I make sure that they feel welcome. I think that's an important thing to do, because ultimately, you know, we were all there at some point. Nobody walked into a gym or started working out with the body of an Adonis. It took work. It took effort, you know? So I just think that, I think both sides need to be a little bit more, or a little bit less, authoritative. Like, this fat doctor, you know, telling people that their goals of health or weight loss or vanity or whatever it is, whatever an individual's goals are wrong, or trying to create some, you know, complex mental maze that you have to do gymnastics through to understand, and to why they feel that they want to make a change. Look, dude, my back hurts. My knees hurt. I was physically uncomfortable. That's not enough of a goal that I just want to change that. I wanted to change because of patriarchy and you know, racist society telling me that I had to. This is nonsense to me.
And this is the thing as well. I feel like, and this is the quote that you always use, actually, that prisons don't work and punishment doesn't work. Like, the reoffending rate in the UK is ridiculous, isn't it? If you've come out of prison. And it's the same with fitness. Like, by punishing people and saying, don't do this, don't do that, fat shaming, it is not going to work. They don't need to hear that. They need positive reinforcement. They need to know you're doing so well, keep going. They don't need your fat, fuck off. Like, you wouldn't ever say that to someone. So it is, and I've definitely seen on social media that the stuff that comes out of people's mouths on social media can be so toxic, whether you are trying to gain weight. Maybe, like, I've had it when I had my eating disorder, awful comments, whether it's for people who are losing weight. Punishment doesn't work, and it won't ever work in that sense.
Well, as human beings of our own psychology, the way that, like, we're motivated to do stuff is not to avoid punishment or avoid the negative. It's because we want, like, that reward. We want positive reinforcement for something. So that's why, like, with stuff for cigarettes for years, they've been putting on the back of smoking will kill you. No one gives a fuck. People are still smoking all the time. It's like, they're not bothered about avoiding that. They want the reward from it. And it's got to be the same with health and fitness. By stigmatizing it and telling people you're a piece of shit, it doesn't help anyone. If anything, it has the complete opposite effect. And it's funny that same thing with smoking, because this, I compared it to someone the other day in regards to the stigma with obesity and weight. And there's a lot of, even from, like, a medical side of GPs and stuff as well, which has been published recently. And it's so different to when you look at those with health implications from smoking. Like, if you looked at someone who had cancer because of smoking, I feel like the stigma is way different when you look at someone who's overweight and has got medical conditions because of that. And the whole term of obesity has just such a negative association. People like to point the finger in different ways at someone who's maybe obese and someone who's got cancer from smoking, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, there's many people who wear their state of unhealthiness beneath the skin that we can't see.
Yeah.
Too, you know, there's so many metrics for this. There's, you know, you could have a rather thin alcoholic who has fatty liver disease and sclerosis of the liver. And we don't see that. Yeah. That's nothing we can see. You could have a guy who's, you know, got super high cholesterol and is borderline, you know, to have a heart attack every day. We don't see that, but we see obesity. It's so objectively right there that I think it's an easy thing to kind of like point at. And, you know, for sure, I think we should, as a society, do better, but we shouldn't pretend that it's healthy.
Yeah.
100%. That the two things I don't think are mutually exclusive.
Yeah. So we shouldn't be glorifying it, basically. I suppose with that, Ethan, as well, you don't mind me asking, with weight loss, there's obviously a lot of reversibility in regards to certain conditions and symptoms. Have you had any long impact and effects from that stage where you were maybe at your heaviest weight and coming down?
Not as far as like cardiovascular or metabolic. I'm very, very healthy in those terms. I still have like some foot and ankle pain that I'm sure is just because I was carrying so much weight for so long. But no, my blood is very, very clean. I've had many, you know, deep stress tests and nuclear stress tests and EKGs and all of this. I've got a very good, clean bill of health.
Yeah, cool. That's great to hear. I think that's no surprise at the end of the day. Like, if every time you stand up, you're basically squatting like 500 pounds or walking. Like, imagine walking with that much weight on a fucking bar. Like,
500 pound squat is, what's that in kg? That's like 260 kg.
220
kg still.
It's a big, it's a big number. There's no surprise it's going to have an impact on the joints and stuff eventually. I suppose though, for you and your fitness journey, then Ethan, what is the next step for you? Like, what does the future look like for you in regards to your personal fitness journey?
I just want to get, you know, I want to edge towards this kind of weight that is like as lean as I can get that I still feel comfortable was around 255. And even that, I look at the pictures and I'm like, I'm a little small. I look a little small. So I'd like to work to get to be that weight, but leaner. So, you know, this is a long process. If I put on 4 or 5 pounds of muscle this year, I'll be very happy. So if I can get to 255 and even, I think the last time I was 9% body fat. So if I, in a DEXA scan, if I can get to 255 and be 8% body fat or 7% body fat, that'd be pretty cool. You know, sub 10% body fat is not something that I'm going to hang out at very long. That's like a short window that I have to exist there, but I think it's this cool target and I'll continue to do it in the way we've been discussing where I take my really long maintenance periods and that's where I'm trying to build muscle or do a little bit of massing, but I have the propensity to hold a lot of water. So increasing my carbohydrates even a little bit, I can rapidly accumulate water. I know it's not fat, but you know, it's a very good thing. If I do this for a few years and then I'm just on maintenance for the rest of my life, I'll be very happy.
I think it's just so like refreshing to hear from someone yourself in the position of authority and the experience that you've been through to it be in such like a sustainable way and put across like that. Like, we hear so many other people, and especially celebrities, are pushing stuff in different ways. I think it's just so refreshing to hear that from your point of view, that you're doing it in that way. And at the end of the day, we all have different goals. Sometimes we want to like slim down and get as lean as possible, and then sometimes you just want to get to a point where your neck's eating your fucking head because you just want to get big and saucy. But
that's what I want.
But I suppose just finishing off with that then, Ethan, what is like the future plans with you and your career moving forward as well then? Do you still see maybe much in acting? Because I feel like with the direction you're moving at the moment, I feel like you have a very big part to play in fitness and health and in Dremel as well. And the message you are pushing is like so powerful.
Yeah, I you know, I'm really enjoying what I'm doing now. The last year has been very weird. There was obviously a huge portion of time where there was no acting work. Everything was done. And we're starting to come out of it. I was able to do a movie. That was very cool, although it was super weird with the amount of COVID testing we had to undergo. And like, it was just a whole new way of doing anything. Not having human contact in a scene because there's this thing called COVID and we're taking our masks off right before we shoot. It was weird.
Yeah.
But I think they're figuring out how to do all this safely, I guess. And also, I think we're coming to the point where so many people have had COVID and there's a vaccine and like, you know, maybe we hit herd immunity soon and then we can all just go party and go to Coachella again or something like that, right? That's what I'm rooting for. I still expect to work as an actor, but I am having a lot of fun, you know, talking to people like you and talking to Dr. Mike and working with Jared and trying to, you know, I like to have people on my podcast, American Glutton, who I have all manner of people. The majority are people who are going to reinforce what we're talking about here. But I also will have guys on who are like, no, nobody should be eating. I've had vegans on, I've had carnivores on. That's the other thing that's so wild to me. When I was a little kid, there were vegetarians. And then there were people who ate more, you know, we had the Atkins diet when I was a little kid, but there was no vegans and carnivore. We have these factions now where it seems wild to me. And I'll talk to them because if one guy hears that and goes like, that actually sounds like something I could do, then I'm happy. I'm happy for people to have success doing whatever. I do find the way I do it to be the best, but it doesn't mean it's the only way. You know, I've tried lots of stuff. This happens to be the one that I've had years of success and maintenance and not had to put on 50 pounds because I forgot to diet one day, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I think I'm on that as well. I think you started listening to some of Ethan's podcasts as well, haven't you?
Yes, I have. And just for everyone listening, in case they didn't catch it, where can people find you best? Either it is on Instagram or your podcast. Plug yourself away. Yeah. Where can people get all the info?
Instagram at Ethan Suplee, and the podcast is called American Glutton.
Amazing.
Is that on iTunes and Spotify? Or have you got a YouTube channel for that as well?
We have a YouTube channel, but I don't know how to do YouTube. Listen, I barely know how to do any of this shit. So I just like, I go to a studio and I talk and then they do something. Yeah. But we do have a YouTube, but I don't know. I don't know if there's anything on it. But I know, yes, Spotify and iTunes.
Cool, yeah. Well, you can find more of Ethan there. And I think there'll be a lot more in regards to your message and more people will be able to dig into. And I'm sure we'll have some awesome guests on there and stuff as well that all listeners can definitely tune into and take a lot more away from your message and see how your journey is going to evolve over the next few months and next year or so as well. So definitely recommend people pop over to there.
Yeah, honestly, your journey is very unique, but I also think it will help so many freaking people. Like a lot of our listeners, like we are completely worldwide, but obviously very UK based. And we do work with a lot of people who are overweight or are obese and they are struggling. So hearing your story and how you've overcome it in a really, really positive way, not even just your journey though, but like the fact where you are now, I think it's so important. Like you have balance, you have sustainability, you have enjoyment. It will be so nice for everyone to kind of, I guess, see a light as well at the end of the tunnel. Do you know what I mean? Like see a light at the end of the tunnel. It's not all bad. You won't always feel like this. So yeah, we massively, massively appreciate having you on. It's really, really been eye-opening and incredible.
Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it too.
Thank you very much. So if anyone who is tuning into this week's episode, please tag me and Lucy on Instagram, tag Ethan as well, because we'll see your tags and stuff as well. It'd be great just to see you sharing the podcast and pushing the episode out as always. And please make sure that you leave a 5-star review on iTunes, because it's much appreciated.
Yeah, because we want to be number one.
Yeah,
in the UK finish charts. We don't fancy number two anymore. We want to be
you either winning or fucking losing.
Yeah, literally, we spoke about that today, haven't we? So thank you so much again, Ethan, and thank you to everyone who has listened and tuned in.